Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Now, I think most of you will know that recently my wife Vicky and I bought a new flat. A super exciting time in anyone's life buying property, but a time that can also be a little bit stressful, especially if you're applying for a mortgage. Now, I had last applied for a mortgage a couple of years ago when we bought our old flat, and I just hated the entire experience. I found it stressful and confusing, and I had to supply so much paperwork, and I just never really knew what was going on, and I just didn't enjoy it so much that I was quite loath to go through the whole process again. But then some angels appeared, some angels by the name of Advantage FS, Advantage Financial Solutions, who are independent mortgage advisors. They were so incredible that they made the entire mortgage application process that easy that I didn't even notice it had happened. I just got an email one day saying, your mortgage has been approved, go and buy your flat. And I was like, oh, what? Oh, amazing. So amazing that I sent them a note and said, look, I would love to talk about you guys on my podcast. Do you mind? They said, no, that would be fantastic. And they've sent over some bullet points, points that they think make them stand out to other players in the market. And I want to read those to you just to kind of, you know, really let you know exactly what they do and then rubber stamp my approval for their services by, again, explaining a little bit more about my experience dealing with them. So they've had hundreds of five-star Google reviews. They always put their customer first. All of the Advantage FS brokers used to work for the consumer champion, which means that they have a unique experience instead of customer first advice. Transparency is key for them. They'll always make you aware of cheaper alternatives to their recommended product if they exist. And there's no obligation. All of their advice is free. Their fee is only charged for arranging a mortgage. So no mortgage, no fee. And there's also a lifetime promise. So as long as you own the property, you will never pay a fee to Advantage FS again. This means all future mortgages that they arrange with them will be completely free. And then they can arrange any type of mortgage from first-time buyers to buy-to-let to retirement mortgages. So the experience that I had was so fantastic that it implored me to mention them to you guys. I mean, for example, we had agreed kind of which rate I was going for. We'd done the whole application. 9 p.m. at night after we'd sort of submitted our application, I got a call from Tom at Advantage saying, Sam, a new rate has come through. I just got email. There's another different rate. We can get. Let's do a different. And I was like, oh my God, it's 9 p.m. at night. But they're just so focused on saving us money and finding us the best rate. And that was incredible customer service. So yes, I highly recommend you check them out if you are in the market for a mortgage or just want some advice. What's amazing is above and beyond all those points I just mentioned, they're going to offer behind the glass listeners 10% off their already super competitive fees if you mention that you are a behind the glass listener when you call up. As I say, you're only going to get charged that fee if you go ahead and take out a mortgage with them. No mortgage, no fee. But you'll get a bit of a discount, as I say, if you say you're a listener. So yeah, absolutely unbelievable service. I just felt like I wanted to let you guys know because I'm sure some of you out there are looking to buy property and maybe considering mortgages or just want some advice about how mortgages work. So get in touch, Advantage Financial Solutions. Now, I have to say, Advantage Financial Solutions are an independent, whole-of-market mortgage and insurance advisors and are authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Anyway, let's crack on with the episode. Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. I'm quite excited for our main topic today. So, as you will have guessed by the title of this episode, today Tony and I are going to be going through our back catalogue, essentially, reminding each other of all the cars that we've owned.
And this is personally for me, because obviously I have a motor dealership.
So we could be here for about 4 days.
Four years. Sell 500 cars a year.
It's something which I guess a lot of you have been asking for a long time. And I feel like over the last few years, every now and again, we have mentioned cars that we've owned. But I don't think, and I might be wrong, that we've ever sat down and both gone through our entire sort of, car history, I suppose.
I think we've skated over it at points. You know, I think there's cars that I've mentioned and there's cars that you've mentioned. Obviously, I'm older than you, so my...
And richer.
Car catalogue, thank you. Not as a family, I'm not, but maybe singularly I am. But I have a lot more debt than you. Yeah. That is for sure. So it's all relative.
It's all relative.
And so obviously because I'm a bit older, I would have had a lot more cars than you probably, right?
Yeah, I think so. And you, I would say, inherently have changed cars more regularly than I have.
Well, since we've known each other, I probably changed cars. But don't forget as well, that is a perk of my job.
For sure. Well, it's become a perk of my job too.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly. You're bang on.
Exactly.
That's right, but that's what happens.
It's going to be fun. And as I say, it's something that a lot of you have requested for a long time. So we thought today would be that day. But before we get into it and go back through, I don't think there's anything that... Well, I've got a couple of embarrassing ones. But anyway, before we do that...
Oh, I've got a lot.
I know some of yours.
Oh, my God.
I thought we'd touch on another topic, which actually we were discussing with Paul on the way in this morning, essentially, over on WhatsApp, which is... Well, it could be a whole other episode, but I think let's do it up front now anyway. What are the scariest cars?
Most dangerous.
Most dangerous, thank you. Most dangerous cars to buy today. Like, because we were knocking around a few different topic ideas, just a bit of a... To reveal the inner sanctum, the inner workings of this podcast, essentially each week on a Friday, Saturday or Sunday into the WhatsApp group, we'll go, what are we going to talk about this week? And we decided to put that into the group with Paul today. And so everyone was batting around these ideas. And I actually thought it was quite an interesting topic, the most dangerous cars...
Well,
most
weeks, to be fair to you, you kind of orchestrate and think of the topics. I barely know most weeks. I just come and sit down and then I react to what he's got to say. And that's why we end up having an argument, which is perfect. But every now and then he'll have a flap and say, Tony, I've got absolutely nothing to think about or talk about today. Think about what we're going to talk about.
Help me. And today, we even got Paul involved, which can sometimes be a disaster.
Oh, it's a disaster.
And he did take the topic and basically decide to discuss it by himself on the WhatsApp group. He just sent about 55 messages after.
Well, has anyone got a friend like that? That literally, because he literally bombs WhatsApp, mate.
Oh, my God.
Once he gets going, like you said, he literally, we just sit there and read it. We don't reply to him. And it's just... Ping, 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 ping.
It's constant.
It's constant.
Once you start a chat with Paul Wallace on WhatsApp, you cannot get rid of the guy. But he did make some good suggestions.
And we don't reply.
No, we don't reply. I never reply. I learned that lesson a long time ago. Just ignore him. But yeah, he did make some good suggestions, which we'll bring up shortly. But I just thought, as I say, before we got into our car history, it's a fun thing to talk about because there are some cars that we've experienced that we know are insanely desirable, but just death, immediate death. And I'll kick it off with the perfect example, which I think people don't realise how deadly it is. The 488 Pista, the Ferrari Pista, it's a death trap. If you go on Instagram and search the hashtag Pista, every fifth photo is one in pieces or upside down in a hedge.
Yeah.
That car is just intrinsically terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, Ferraris in general, but the Pista, because it's got so much power, and them tyres, until you get them tyres hot, because they're twos, unless they're at the absolute optimum temperature, the car just doesn't go in a straight line, mate. And even if you think, oh, I'll back the traction control off and it can go into race, what people don't understand is that traction control or not, when it's gone, it's gone. Traction control is only gonna stop you so far, but when they've gone, they've gone. And Pista with cold tyres. I mean, in the rain, my friend might mind me saying this because he doesn't watch YouTube.
won't mind me saying because he won't know I've said it.
Because he won't know I've said it. He had a brand new one when they come out in like 18 and we was all in the Alps. And the car had done barely 200 miles and he was doing 20 mile an hour on a hairpin and he went straight on into another car. He was doing 20 mile an hour, mate.
Couldn't stop it.
Just had no grip.
Yeah.
No grip at all. In the wet, they are lethal.
And I think there's something about, I agree with you, it's tire temperature for sure. The fact it's so snappy, it's not an easy car to drift, let's say, because once it goes that tiny bit too far, you're gone, you're around. And I think as well, it gives you a false sense of security, that car, because the electronics and the systems are so good. When the temperatures are warm or when it can catch you, you think, oh yeah, cool, like let's just get in and floor it, like, I'll be fine. But the minute you're not paying attention, or the minute the tyres aren't the right temperature, or you hit a slightly greasier patch, or whatever it could be, you're just gone.
But you know what Ferraris do in general, and the Pista is one of the worst for it. Like, you're absolutely right, that's what they'll do. And you think you're fine. Then you'll go around the next corner and it will snap for no reason. The tyre's the same temperature. You're on the same road. They're so unpredictable, which is why it's one of my most favourite cars.
That's why we like it.
I just love it for that reason. Because, honestly, if you overstep the mark, you are dead. It's as simple as that.
So let's think of a few others. What else comes to your mind if I say to you, what's a dangerous car?
Oh, mate. I mean, it's another car that I would absolutely buy in a heartbeat. The F12 TDF.
Yes, I mean, famously.
Full on death.
But you know what? Full on death, I agree. But actually, you don't see too many of them in the bin because...
didn't make that many.
Well, they didn't make that many. And I think most people just don't drive them enough or hard enough because they're so terrified of them. It's famously twitchy because of the rear wheel steer. It's a very new system for Ferrari at the time. They didn't quite get it right, where essentially the rear turned around too quickly. Yeah. So the car would kind of have a second bite of the apex hole. It was just a scary old treacherous thing to drive. But yeah, you don't see as many Pistas, you just see them crashed everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
TDFs.
It's the torque, mate, as well. And it's the turbocharged and it's the torque in them.
In the Pista, because
it's turbocharged, it comes straight away. And if someone thinks they can half drive, the car goes to slide and they try to correct it and then it will snap the other way.
Snap, exactly.
That's the problem. And then you're in a wall.
Then you're in a wall.
No, you're just are.
TDF, you're right. McLaren P1.
McLaren P1 is right up there.
So years ago, I had my first experience in a P1, not driving one, but in the passenger seat of one. That video lives online. The guy driving it, proper legend, super nice guy. I do think he knows what he's doing. At least I gave him that benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. We nearly died about four times.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of, I think I edited out. There's definitely a few clips you can see I've edited out a chunk because nearly died. It's just maniacal. Yeah. Like, and I think a lot of people have driven on the edge, even Chris Harris, Jeremy Clark, stuff like that. They all say it's terrifying.
And the thing is with that car, inherently McLarens are fairly safe because they dial in loads of understeer. So they are normally inherently, like, they always push on into corners. So it's just weird that that car just doesn't do that. I mean, yeah. I've never driven a PM1, a P1. I've been in one, but not at breakneck speeds. But you are right. I mean, apparently they are really hard to drive.
What else can we think of that's...
Oh, mate, Carrera GT is another one.
Yes, I mean, as I mentioned, when my first drive the other day, famed, but for years, it's just being death traps. I mean, we all know the highly famous people who've crashed or even, I mean, died in that car. Mm. So that is terrifying, has a terrifying reputation. Speaking of Porsches, 997 GT2 RS, I guess any GT2 from Porsche.
The Widowmaker,
exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I went out in a 997 GT2 RS. The thing was spinning in fourth gear.
Yeah, current one's very good, as in...
Sure,
you know,
it's because it's four-wheel drive.
Do you remember when you said that?
For those of you who haven't listened to this podcast regularly for a while, I once really put my foot in it by saying the GT2 RS was four-wheel drive.
And because you thought the big bar at the front in the boot holds water, but you thought it was a front drive.
I'll never live that one down. That's why it's so safe to drive, Tony.
But, I mean, if you turn the aids off, obviously it'll be an animal, but Porsches in general, modern Porsches, because of where the engine is, they don't break traction as easy as say a modern Ferrari, essentially. So
it's about like predictability of the power output, of the traction, of the chassis control, you know, because as you say, like especially the more modern cars have a lot of electronics to keep you safe. But even despite that, there are just moments where things can, yeah, unpredictable can happen. And I mean, Carrera GT, the excitement, the bit that I loved about that car was the high rev, the way that the revs build in that engine. But the thought that you touch a damp patch, you just think, well, that's just going to spin things up and I'm going to be in a tree.
P1,
we've already mentioned. Just I'll tell you another one as well. Go on, please.
CLK Black.
CLK Black. Yes, but I disagree, actually.
Or the C63 Black is another one as
Yeah,
well.
I mean, because it's obviously a lot of power to the rear.
Or any AMG Merc.
Any AMG Merc. But I found the CLK predictable. I didn't find it dangerous. Okay. I found it very predictable. If I slammed the throttle, like, but there are a few that are sketchier in their nature. Clio V6. That was a terrifying death trap. The one with the one in the middle, the engine in the middle.
Well, I mean, they got no steering lock.
No, that's what I mean.
I mean, can't I had one anyway. Of them a long time, but that's going to be on one of my, because I had one of them long time ago. And literally, that's the lock.
Yeah, which if you're listening, Tony's doing, I don't know what that is.
30, half turn.
30 degree half turn of angle. They were a disaster. They were terrifying death traps. There's probably a few more.
Smart car.
Smart.
No, you don't want to have a crash in one of them. You're dead.
No, you don't want to have a crash in one of them.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. You just roll down the hill. You just keep rolling like a roly-poly.
Gee whiz.
I mean, but these are cars that you look at and you think that's dangerous.
Yeah, I'm not getting in one of them. I'd rather be in a bin.
But there are cars out there, as I say, which I think people lust after. And the dangers are part of it. Let's not get, like, it's a big attractive factor. You know, a car that might want to kill you is quite an exciting car to drive.
AMG GTR in the wet.
Okay, interesting.
A pig.
It's terrifying. Oh, speaking of that, 720. Well, anything with a, what is it on a Trofeo R tyre, I guess?
So any road car on a Trofeo or a Cup 2 or a Cup 2R.
In the rain?
Yeah, apart from a Porsche.
Okay.
Because of where
there he is.
No.
Flying the flag.
No. But compared to the others, you can drive a Porsche on them tyres in the rain, but the rest of them, and do you know why that is?
Go on.
It's a different compound to all the rest.
Okay, so
as its own compound.
I was fascinated by this. So I've worked with, I mean, Pirelli now for 3-4 years. I worked with Michelin a great lot before that. I've worked with other tyre brands too. Been on endless kind of, you know, press trips and met with different engineers.
We had Jonathan on for the tyre.
Yeah, we had John Benson on. Yeah. I mean, the tyre man, tyre reviews. I mean, just an absolute genius.
Yeah.
Top guy as well, by the way. I owe him some replies on WhatsApp. Jonathan, I know you listen. I'm sorry that I'm so bad at replying to you on WhatsApp. Just make a public declaration.
I can let you into a secret as well. I was with Paul Wallace the other day and he was messaging Paul Wallace.
Oh, was he?
Jonathan.
Benson.
I know.
Yeah.
Mr. Benson. Saying, I'm in front of the new GT3 RS. I can't send it. We're like, well, Paul was going, like, send pictures of me.
He was at a testing facility or something?
I don't, yeah, it must be to do with tyres, obviously. And he wouldn't, he said, like, I can't send you any picture. Yeah. Like, they've said no photos. Yeah. So, damn.
Anyway, we're on a complete tangent there. But what I was going to say is, at the 296 GTB launch, I was on a table at dinner with one of the guys from Michelin who was there.
Is that Death, that car?
Is that Death?
Death.
Sorry, yeah. I thought it was Death. I was like, I don't know. Is it Death? I don't know. Should we do sign language to talk to it? Death. No. Because, okay, mate, I didn't die in it and I drove it with CT off and I don't know what I'm doing. So if I, you know, that would
have... On the video, you look like what you used to.
Thank you. Very good, mate.
Well, you know. I mean, you was going quite slow, but it was very good.
Everything looks slow on camera, Tony.
Okay.
I was going very fast. I think you're fine. You can look at the speedo next time you watch that video back. Anyway, he was just talking about this because I said, you know, when they did the press evening briefing, they were like, oh, these special tires, we worked so hard. I don't know why I'm doing this with the voice. And they went, they are the Pilot Sport 4S or the Cup 2R, whatever it's called. And I was like, why no? They're not new tyres. Like,
4S are very good.
I went on the 4S
tire
launch about 6 years ago. So what are you on about? So at dinner, I said to him, like, what does that mean? Because it's obviously not a new tyre. And he explained about, obviously, manufacturer stamped tyres. So
correct.
That they're specific compounds or tread patterns for a particular vehicle. So yes, PS4S is almost an umbrella type of tyre, then each individual, you'll get K marked or F marked or J marked, whatever, for Porsche, for Ferrari, for McLaren, whoever it might be, and they are specifically designed for that car. And Shmi was explaining with the AMG GT Black Series, the tread pattern, everything about it's completely different to, I guess it's Ford GT, they must have similar tyres.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's, and how important is it if you're replacing the tyres, you must get the manufacturer approved. You, of course, you can have a standard PS4S, but you're getting nowhere near the performance or the capabilities as if you had the Ferrari approved, stamped, whatever tyres. So makes total sense because, embarrassingly, that's why I keep fitting Pirelli's to the 360. And I mean, that's why Pirelli advised, that's why Benson said that's the right route to go, because that's what it was fitted with from factory. That's optimal. And whilst the technology might have moved forward in some other modern tyres, that tyre that I can fit from Pirelli has that historic capability. It's obviously been advanced as well. And it's got that stamp. So anyway,
absolutely, yeah.
Got caught on a tangent there. Should we get into some car history?
Yeah.
Yeah, you sure? You seem apprehensive. I know some of your cars, but I don't think I know all of them. I wonder if you know all the cars that I've owned.
Well, I mean, I've sold half of them.
No. So. But I owned a lot of cars before I met you.
I know some BMWs and some Audis. And
yeah.
Some, I know some stuff.
I think you know most of the stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go, first off, I'm going to go from first car through to YouTube. And we'll discuss those. Then I want to come over to you and go from first car through to, I mean, because you're going to have had so many. I don't know if we're going to get through them all.
It'd be more than 100.
First car through to, when did I meet you? I met you with the Okay, well, we'll decide. We'll go first car through to, then we'll come back to me and I'll do the YouTube cars. Then I want to come back to you to do the kind of, from when I met you onwards. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I remember.
You know what car you had when we met?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let's try that, see how we get on. This could go on for a while, or it's going to be a very short episode.
No, so my, for a while.
Yeah. My first car, which everyone I think knows, I've spoken about many times before, Mark IV Volkswagen Golf.
I know this.
Yeah, growing up, that was just, for me, was the car I always wanted. My sister had passed her test a couple of years before me, or a year or so before me. She'd also had a Mark IV.
She's older than you.
She's 2 years older, but she'd only passed her test a year before.
Better driver than you?
Nope. No. She doesn't listen to this, so I'll just go in and say she's really not a great driver. She gets distracted too easily. So anyway, but bless her. But yeah, Mark IV Golf, when I was growing up, that was, for me, the cool, awesome first car. I got my parents to stretch. I think it was like $2,500 or something like that for the car. 1.4 litre engine.
Perfect.
Took it to Halfords, got all the light. I got new chrome air conditioning intakes, chrome strips on the, I've changed the wheels. I mean, it was just, but it was mega and I loved it and I adored those. And Mark IV Golf
Mark
still.
Mark IV, yeah.
Yeah, the boxy one.
Yeah.
After that, I've never really liked golfs that much. Mark IV was like the one for me.
That's the one you like.
That's the one I liked. So I had that car for maybe a year and a half, I think, about a year and a half. It was my first car, absolutely adored it. Did some cool trips up to Scotland and stuff like that, but I slept in it at a friend's party. Then, very sadly, my grandfather died, a big hero of mine, but he left me like 10 grand in his will.
An estate.
No, I wish. By the way, someone commented this the other day. And someone commented being like,
Sam said in his RS6 video, he's not that wealthy and he had to borrow money to buy this car. But I think you'll find he is wealthy because he's the heir to the Earl of Westmoreland and the son of the...
And I was like, okay, can we just clarify for a second? Unfortunately, that means... Jack all. Yeah. I wish it did mean something. It looks really nice on a piece of paper, but unfortunately, many, many centuries ago, some douchebag ancestors of mine gambled away whatever family. What, I don't even know what we had. An estate, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm like, but we don't have it anymore. So, unfortunately, whilst you might be able to Google me and see that, oh, look, this lovely heritage, which I adore that there's incredible history to my family and an incredible story of my ancestors and things like that. That's so lovely to be part of, and I want to continue that. It is just some writing on paper, which at the moment isn't even on my side of the family. It's my uncle. So it doesn't really mean much at all. But Tony likes to think that it does and mob me up every now and again. So yeah, anyways, he died, left me 10 grand, which obviously it's a ton of money.
You was
19.
Yes, yeah, a ton of money.
Car.
It's a ton of money anyway in anyone's book. But
I was like, car. So sold the Golf for like a couple of grand. I had 12.
Your sister got 10 grand.
My sister got 10 grand as well, yeah. Don't know what she did with it. No idea. Probably bought like teddy bears or something.
Teddy bears at 21.
I actually have no idea what she did with her money. No, not a clue. But I went straight onto Auto Trader and I ended up finding a BMW 330i saloon.
Very cool.
14,700 quid or something like that. Had like 30,000 miles on it. And I had like 12 grand. I was like, oh,
E46?
No, E90.
Oh, right.
Mate, well proper done, car. Mate. Yes. Okay, you say this though. So off I go, off to buy this car at 19 years old, 330i saloon. I mean, it did 0-16 in like 6.1 seconds or something.
Legit.
Ridiculous. Proper legit, mate. Dark blue, black interior, all the nice spec. It was a hunk of junk. I bought it from someone near Newcastle. I had brake fluid leak. I had petrol leak out of it at one point. Every single fuse in the car could go like, I used to endlessly not be able to open any doors apart from the rear right passenger
door.
That's
annoying.
Oh, mate, it was a disaster.
Probably had to whack that car at some point. I mean, that together prompt wrong.
No wonder it was so cheap. Yeah. It was probably a cat whatever. And I was like, oh, I don't know, like, great, I found this car. Like, no one in my family knew about that kind of stuff. So I was like, I'll go buy it, it seems affordable. And it was costing so much to run. I was lucky because I was working straight out of school, But I loved it, mate.
Yeah.
I loved that thing. At 19 years old, having a 330i saloon.
Yeah.
What a beast. Felt so quick. All my mates were like, what the heck? Did loads of miles in it. But after about a year, it was costing me so much I had to get out of it.
Okay.
So I went and got a Gen 1 Audi S3.
Gen 1, that's a good car.
Black with the ivory interior. Audi Recaro bucket seats.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Three-door or five-door?
Three-door.
I think they were only three-door then.
Maybe they were only three-door then.
Yeah, I think they were.
Manual, like. Yeah. And everywhere I went that was like a car-ish place, people were like, I really like your car, mate. And that was the first time that I had a car that, because the 330i, like all my mates were like, wow, like what a cool car. But no one else really cared because I looked like a traveling salesman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The S3 was the first time people were like, oh, it's
hot hatch.
This is a proper, and mate, the spec on it was the bomb. Like I'm not, I've never seen a spec like that again. Like it was to the bloody nines. But because I was that the first car I financed? No, I must've bought that cash. No, how did I afford that car? I think it was like a 23 grand car.
Mm.
I must have financed that car, I think. I don't really remember. But anyway, it was amazing. Absolutely loved that. But why did I sell it? I didn't keep it very long. I loved it, but I had it about 6 months because I swapped four Audi A6 with the 4.2 litre V8 engine. Did about 3 mpg.
Yeah, that's a disaster.
Mate, it was a disaster.
So this is classic, and we see this all the time. You've swapped a better car.
So it was the C6. I'm just googling now. Yeah, the C6 shape, 4.2 litre V8. In my head, it's because I wanted the RS6 at the time. Oh, look how that worked out.
10 years later.
Yeah, couldn't afford the RS6. Found out that you could get the V8. And I was like, hello.
That was a good engine though, that V8.
It was an amazing engine.
It went
engine,
in
mate.
The S5 and stuff like that.
It literally did 5 mpg.
Yeah.
The fuel economy was, and it was huge. It was like a luxury spec. So I had all this kind of weird equipment in it, and it was grey inside with the light blue exterior. It was just a bizarre car. Like, yeah. And I think I had it being like, I don't know why I've got
that
this.
That is peculiar.
I didn't have it very long either. So I think I had the A3 and the A6 for about 6 months each. Wheeled, like both of them were like, oh, this is not going on. And eventually ended up in the TTS.
Which is another good car.
Which was a brilliant
and
car.
And was it manual?
No, I had the
DSG car.
DSG.
I used to like them, especially the manuals, not because I thought that they were better than the DSG, because the DSG was obviously better to drive, but when you change gear, they'd have a little psst, the turbo noise. Always, like a little, that engine, that, I mean, it's two litre TFSI.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
280 horsepower or something like that. It might have been 260 odd.
Sure.
I vividly remember them cars, and they're the same engine in the S3, in that model S3. And I always used to get in one of them and just think, flipping, oh, it's an half a good car, this.
Mate, it
had like a bit of character.
I adore that. Yeah. For me, that was a proper little sports car. Like, absolutely loved it. A baby R8.
Mm.
Like, at the time, it was still the latest shape. The new shape hadn't come out yet.
Yeah.
I just thought it was the absolute bomb. I flew around in the thing. And that was kind of then inspired me on, of course, to start seeing through glass. Because it was the first time I was in a proper little sports car, going out, getting in the mix, in and around London. Okay, it's often look down on the TT, but mate, I adored the thing. Like, so I must have been 20, 24, I guess, 24, 25 when I had that car.
Well, it had that, because of that previous shape, it had that stigma attached hairdresser's car, but it grew up then. And obviously when they bring the TTS out, it definitely wasn't a hairdresser's car the way it behaved. It drove like a proper car.
That was definitely the first car I financed.
Yeah.
That's the car I financed. And that was about 400 quid a month, I think. Did it through Audi West London, which is really not far from STGHQ. So, I adored it. I look back very fondly and don't regret my time at all. And it's the car, probably one of the cars I've owned the longest, apart from the 360. I had that car for 2.5 years. Really, really adored it. Proper big kit. So that brings me about to start with YouTube. Most people will know my history after that, but we'll review it anyway. I now want to move on to Mr. Tony Gravelwood.
I mean, we're gonna do lump block skips.
Yeah, yeah.
There's too many cars.
I want you to kind of reel.
Yeah.
If you forget stuff, we won't know. So I'm gonna pick you up on any cars that surprise me. Some cars I don't think I'm gonna know because we've done this before and I haven't had a clue some things you're saying. So kick us off. Remind everyone quickly what your first car was.
My first car was a white Austin Maestro.
Good luck, Ben, finding an image of that to put on the overlay.
Which is a full-on disaster, basically. It was a manual 1.3. And I actually had a brown one before then.
Oh, brown. Bring brown back.
But I didn't have a driving license then. So that was the car I used to take to school, and I'd run a corner for my mum, and I used to drive to school in it. But I was like 15 or 16. So that's...
How much did they cost? How did you get that car?
Like a few hundred quid, mate.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I worked at 15.
Sure, I remember you saying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I went to work. I had
it wasn't an expensive car.
No. Yeah. And the brown one I had, I'll tell you a little bit of a funny story, just going off topic. I got chased around my estate by the police at 11 o'clock at night.
No.
Because it had no headlights. So I was driving it around my estate at night time. I lived on a council estate, and I was driving it around the estate in the middle of the night, and the police were coming the other way, and I've come bombing up round the corner, and they've had to swerve into a thing, and then I thought, oh shit, it's the police. So I knew the state. I drove it on the field. I dumped it off.
Oh,
I run
my
off.
God, you're like police interceptors. I love it.
Chasing a male. Yeah.
So, but I had to, mate, because I wasn't.
Like, but
I
surely at that bed. Point you would have got penalty points. Like
no. I mean, I didn't want to get penalty points. I mean, I should have been in bed. I had school the next day, so it was like hilarious. And I remember running down the horses field, and I used to run across the horses field and down the steps and back home because the car wasn't registered to me. It was a hell of a long time ago.
Oh,
and as well,
God.
I'll tell you another story. I used to work Saturday at the bus garage. At the time, we still had old tax discs. And I couldn't have insurance, so I couldn't tax a car. So I nicked a disc out of the bus and stuck it on the car. So anyway, I've got loads of stories like that, but that's just a story.
Sure.
But my first car, and it was probably influenced by that car, was a white Austin Maestro.
How long did you have it?
Oh, not long. I probably blew it up. And then I had, I went from that to a 2.3, it was gold as well.
Oh, look at you and your strong colour choices at the start of your life. What happened to you?
This car was like 200 quid though, so you can imagine. It was a 2.3 gear Ford Sierra hatchback. So it's like a 5-door thing.
But wait, you didn't blow up the Maestro or anything like that?
I honestly think it caught fire.
Oh.
Like, I honestly think like...
It did die. Choose to change the car, it died.
No, it died.
Okay.
It was like 150 quid, mate. I mean, when I was young, you could easily buy a car 150 quid. And then I had the Ford Sierra. And I remember putting a sound system in that car, the sound system being worth more than the car. And it just shook. All the while, you know, I had two big, like in my day, we had big bass amp things that you just force in the back of the boat, and you couldn't get anything in the boat or two apart from these two big.
Sound like when I had that Abarth. Remember when I met Abarth?
Yes. So that was my second car, and then I think I had a Cavalier. That was green.
Oh,
I had a green. Because I didn't care about colour. I just wanted a car.
Sure.
Because I didn't have any money.
You ended up with great colours.
I just had like these weird cars. I had a green...
No one else wanted.
Yeah. Because they were cheap. So it was all about money. Because I didn't have none. And I had a green Cavalier. And then from there, and then I got a bit braver. Oh no, mate, flipping hell. I had an E30. Yeah, this was after the Cavalier. I had an E30 325 M Sport.
Ooh,
BMW.
Hello.
Yeah.
That must have been a lovely bit of kit.
That was the only car,
touch wood,
to this day I've written off.
Oh.
I crashed it into a skip.
Did you?
My mate nearly went through the windscreen.
No.
Yeah, his head hit the windscreen.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because I was going around a blind corner, flat out, thinking, and a van would come down the other way, and it was the God. Van or the skip, and I hit the skip.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That was the, and I wrote it off.
Oh.
But that was a really cool car.
Yeah, I was going to say, and right now it'd be worth some money as well.
Yeah, leather and leather seats, had that nice body kit on it. The nice.
But that must have been a bit of money at that point.
No, it was like 1,500 quid, mate.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like, yeah. I can't remember. It was less than 100,000 miles, 80,000, 90,000 miles. And I remember at the time, because obviously I used to buy cars then, I didn't finance. I remember I can't remember where I was working. I was 18 or something. So it was a cool car to have at 18. And
many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And my boss at the time, I just can't remember exactly what I was doing. He lent me some of the money to buy the car, and then I worked it off.
Okay.
So that's how I got it, and then I wrote it off. And then I don't know. It all goes a bit
murky,
blurry. Yeah. And then I remember the Renault 5 GT Turbo days. I remember the the Escort RS Turbo that I had. I remember the Nissan Pulsar GTR I had. Then I went Subaru STI, which was a proper, like, at that point, like, legit proper.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, my mates were like, oh, my God, this is the fastest thing ever. It was a tuned Jap import car.
Okay, wow. That
I'd bought from a dealer in, like, Folkestone.
Sure.
Like, they were called something. But sure. It was, like, legit. It was, like, the fastest thing ever, you know, like, back then, you know. And then I grew up a bit and I had some decent cars, and then.
But wait, what do you mean?
No, I just can't remember what they are. But the when I got to really, I'm missing loads out, mate.
I'm sure, but I sort of almost don't want you to.
So there's the first real proper decent car I got, and this was the first car I ever financed, was a 2003. It was nearly new. It was a 2003 BMW 330i convertible manual.
Look at us in our 330i's.
Yeah.
So
E46.
E46.
But
okay.
It was the, I think it was a 53 plate, so it was the LCI car with the dotted lights.
Okay.
And that was a proper car, but you know, like that was the first real proper car.
So up
car
until then, you'd kind of just been messing around with relatively affordable, but as high performance as you could. So anything that was fast.
Basically.
Yeah, fast but affordable. And you were chopping and changing cars, whatever.
Oh, mate, flipping hell. I had a 205 GTI, 1.9.
Oh, again, I mean, how do I miss that?
What a car that was.
But How often were you changing your cars?
Oh, mate, like I was changing my clothes.
Really?
Yeah, like...
You'd have this for a couple of months and you'd be gone.
No, because there was like a group of us that obviously started to like cars, and it was all like, hold on a minute, he's got a faster car than me now. And it was all about fast.
Okay.
Didn't matter what it was, my best mates, I always made sure I had the faster car, the fastest car. And once I got to Nissan Pulsar and Subaru, I started blowing them all out of the water because they had like Golfs and stuff.
Sure. There was no brand allegiance at this point.
Hell, here we go. There's some more, and these are the ones in between. I had a Mark II Golf GTI,
okay,
8-valve and a 16-valve. They were cool cars. And I remember this like it was yesterday. My pal had a similar car, and we'd always take the Mickey out of him because both 8-valve, they were C registration cars, C-res, like 86, 87 cars. But my one was just really fast.
Okay.
I don't know why. And we used to race around my estate in reverse. We'd go flat out in reverse, right around the estate. And it was a disaster.
How you're still alive and not in jail, I don't know.
How we didn't die back then, honestly, mate.
It, ludicrous.
Some of the stuff we did was like...
But it's kind of ridiculous because at the time, you know, you were in this kind of fight to who could be the fastest and no brand allegiance or whatever. But if you look back at what these cars are and write them down on a piece of paper, not only are these now desirable collector cars, but they also look back as some of the greats, you know, like, especially when you're talking about Golf GTIs and like, there's proper bits of kit there.
And the Golf, you know, the Golf, especially that one I was talking about, that old, it was a white car, it was a 5-door, and it had them round dish wheels, you know. Do you remember like the old Pirelli wheels where they'd have like little lines round them? They were like a dish wheel, and they'd have like P. They're called something.
Okay,
that was a really cool car. And I my one didn't have power steering. My mate's one had a power steering because it was like an F reg, so he had a power steering car. But my car was loads faster, and he always used to say, "Yeah, because mine's got power steering." but I would honestly just like launch him up the road. I don't know why, but it was really cool. Like okay. I had some as a kid. I had like some real legit. But it's what I spent my money on. I worked hard.
And how were you choosing the stuff?
Like how fast it was.
But how did you know how fast it was? Like, were you reading car magazines? Or?
Yeah, okay, fine. Like back then, like, that's really fast. Or, you know, there was just like, that's how we'd get our information. Yeah, yeah. Like watching telly and, there was no social media.
Of course. Yes. 1940s, mate, they didn't have an internet. So then the BMW is the first car you financed. It's the first legit car. And at that point, like, so how long did you keep that, for example?
So, what happened with that car? I actually can't remember. I must have sold it or something. I don't know, whatever. And at the time, I paid 15 grand for it. I remember because the first car I ever financed. And I remember at the time looking at an M3, an SMG M3, that E46. And that was 18 grand. It was 3 grand more. And it was another bit of money every month. I don't know what it was. And I remember thinking, there can't be that much different. I mean, they were, but they can't be that much difference. I just have the
330.
Because back then, mate, it was like, what's it like on fuel?
Yeah.
Like, you know, is it good on fuel?
Sure.
And back then, fuel was probably
80p a litre.
I remember fuel being 64p or 62p a litre.
Yeah, in my childhood, I remember it being 80, 90p.
Yeah. And then when I started driving, it was about a pound.
Yeah.
About a pound. Because I remember at the time, like, there was fuel strikes and people queuing up. When it went to a pound a litre, people, like, really kicked
freaked
off.
Out.
Yeah. Which is why I said the other day, stop buying fuel.
Yeah.
Because the fuel went in on me.
Yeah, I did go on.
I can't do that.
Ridiculous. Okay, so you have no idea how long you kept the BMW for.
It was a legit car, though.
Legit car.
I had hit the jackpot at that point. I was 20...
Both of us in outrageous 330 BMWs, young.
Yeah.
Great point to enter into the sort of luxury performance car market.
Yeah.
If any of you made a little bit of money, go out and see what a 330i does
for
you.
Well, I wasn't working myself at that for myself. I still was working, as in working for someone. I might have still been a bus driver just at that point. But I used to grow up, work hard, you know, so I had the money. And I think I sold it because I wanted to start the business. I think that's why. And I had a few vans in there in between. I've had some other stuff that I've missed out as well. But they're that's the stuff that I can think of that comes to mind. Because there's so many, mate. I just can't remember. And then after the 3:30, I had vans.
Living your best life.
Well, I'd started the window cleaning company and the valeting company at that point. Window cleaning first, and I sold that, and then went on to the valeting, which inherently got me into the cars, and that's how it all started. So I had a van, a transit van.
So all the fast stuff took a back seat.
Yeah, because the BMW had to go because I didn't want the monthly payment because I didn't have a job then. And then all the money went, the money that I did have, which wasn't a lot. And then I borrowed some money from the bank as well. Okay. And that's how I got going. So I started. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to come back to your story, I guess, when you leave the vans behind for a period of time and go back into the juicy stuff.
Into the cars, probably... I mean, there's some Nissan Micras in there. And
No, I don't need to know about that. We'll rejoin your history shortly for the juicy bits. I do still feel like you skipped past a lot. But
a lot, mate.
It's because you were a madman. I mean, like, we get crap. I mean, I get crap on social media every now and then for changing my car after 9 months. I mean, meet Tony, who's not alone in the fact that he changes his car every 2 to 3 months. You change your car. I mean, it's only been until recently that you've actually slowed down a little bit, I have to say.
And it's not just that as well. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have a point to prove. I thought I'd come up to say.
So we picked my story back up with the TTS, which I said have a couple of years, about 2.5 years now. And just as I was starting YouTube, I was thinking about changing that car anyway. Because, you know, I think, I don't know what length of PCP I'd taken, but it was at that point where after a couple of years, I was like, okay, I'm probably ready to change. And I'd been really looking at F-Type. Weirdly, so had my mum. My mum had always had Audi Cabriolets, A4s and things like that. She'd had an S5 at the time, maybe. Anyway, so I was just about thinking of changing, and I'd been looking at F-types. Couldn't afford a V8, but looked at the V6 for a lot. Then I thought, oh no, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to get another TT, and they'd done the facelift by that point. I was going to get another TTS. Came back to West London, spec one up in the yellow, whatever it's called, the sunset yellow
Racing yellow or something
like that. Anyway, so expect one half, and it was, you know, it was all very attractive, very good, but I sort of hadn't quite pulled the trigger, wasn't quite convinced yet, felt a bit, I don't know, not as exciting as maybe I wanted it to be. And YouTube at that point, I probably had 2,000 or 3,000 subscribers. It had just begun, and I was aware of the fact that the TT maybe wasn't quite that thrilling on YouTube, and I'd been perusing social media when Joe McCarry posted on their Instagram that they had a 4C coming in. And I called them straight away and said, I want to know about the 4C. And it ended up being Wolfie Cutners, who some of you might know on Instagram. Top lad, Wolfie. Super nice guy. And it was, I think, his car maybe, anyway, part of their collection that was coming in for sale. He said, yeah, it's literally in the wash bay right now. I was like, I want it. And ended up picking the 4C, which was quite a mad step. But at the time, no one knew about them, let alone me. They were such unknown entities, but so intriguing. And for me, someone who had always loved cars from the outside, this was like a basically little baby supercar, you know, relatively affordable. And it was the same, I think it was like 5 or maybe 10 grand more than the TTS I'd spec'd up. So I think I bought it for 54 grand or something like that. So yeah, that's probably about 10 grand more than the TTS at the time. And man, I adored that thing when I couldn't believe it. I was like, I own a supercar. Like, I literally own a bloody supercar. The thing blew my mind, and it was absolutely incredible. And as a lot of people know, because it was well documented on the channel, went on some amazing adventures. That really opened the doors for me to the car world, but also to the social media world. Got me invited on some cool trips, got me to meet some cool people. And was amazing right up until a van reversed into it as it was parked outside my house. Did we know each other at this point? I don't think we did.
No, we didn't know each other. I know the story.
Yeah,
we just didn't know each other. No.
I used to live on a London street, which my house was kind of at a T-junction. So there was a road approaching my house, and you could, I was street parking, so I'd park all over the different places. And at one point, for whatever reason, I'd parked sort of at the end of that T-junction, and a van, a delivery van guy, was trying to do a 3-point turn like that, moving, and had just backed right into the 4C. And because the 4C was made out of paper mache, it just crumpled. Like, it just completely crumbled. And I came home from work and I was like, what's that? Why is there like paper all over the back of my car? And I was like, oh, that's not paper. It's literally just falling apart. So It never felt the same at that point. I was
they never
like,
do, mate.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm at that point, I'm done. And I think I'd been kind of back into the F-Type thing because, you know, before I started YouTube, F-Type was always the kind of car there. Then I'd maybe started to make a little bit of money through work. YouTube was building, and I was like, oh, you know what, maybe I'm going to do this whole F-Type thing. I think I'd received my first payment of £1,000, and I was like, oh, I'm going to do it. So somehow struck the deal on F-Type R. And actually, speaking of cars that are dangerous, let's talk about that for 2 seconds. Yeah, rear-wheel drive F-Type R.
Yeah,
those things were a death trap. And yeah. I remember I went to collect it with Seb Delaney, and we picked it up from Jaguar Guildford, drove it out, and you have to go under the underpass of the A3 to get back onto the A3, and it was a bit damp. And I booted it from the light, and we were three lanes over by the time we got out of the tunnel. Do you know what I mean? I went into the tunnel
on
the left lane, and I ended up on the far right because of the tank slapper I had. I was like, oh my God. I was like, oh my God, that's terrifying. And I remember the next day we were driving it down into a Euro trip. So literally picked up the car on a Wednesday. On the Thursday, we were on the Euro trip. And on the way to the Euro tunnel, I was watching the fuel being like, oh.
Yeah,
this ain't good. Like, literally, woof, the fuel tank was emptying so fast. But everyone will know my love affair with the F-Type continues to this day. What car? For me, that felt like such a huge step. The 4C was incredible, but always felt a little bit underpowered, a tiny bit gimmicky, a little silly, a little Lotus-like, as we know. And so then the F-Type was like, power, luxury,
proper
equipment.
Grown-up car, isn't it?
Proper yeah. grown-up
yeah,
car.
Yeah.
Dynamically, nowhere near as good as the 4C, weirdly, because of the weight.
Yeah.
But fun to drive. I had to recalibrate. I'd done a lot of fast driving, personally, but that was the first time I was out on a car where I had to really think about the dynamics, readjust and think, right, it's a heavy car. How am I going to get it around the corners? How do I drive this fast? Made a few mistakes early on, got to be honest.
As we do. So
as we do, yeah. But absolutely adored that thing. Loved and loved and loved and loved it. But this is kind of where you came into my life when I was just starting to think about moving it on. And that was purely a YouTube decision. I'd had the car for about a year.
Yeah.
And I was like, pressure's on, time to change it up. And we kickstarted the hunt for my first supercar,
when we first met,
And
2016.
Yeah, it must have been 2016.
Yeah.
And I think off the back of the 570S or 570 GT launch in Tenerife, I was fairly convinced that's what I wanted to be my next car. But could I afford it was the kind of question. And when we met and we started doing that, had I already... Did we already know that we wanted the McLaren? Or did I... I can't remember what I was decided at that point. Because we went and test drove a lot of things, but things that we knew we weren't going to consider, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, that's YouTube.
Yeah, just to kind of really peel it back. I mean, at the time, you know, we went in there where I don't think I had fully decided.
That Maserati we test drove.
Oh my God, we drove... We drove this Maserati, which actually was like, it sounded nice, but it was really not.
It was terrible.
We did Maserati 430 Ferrari, which was genuinely very, very good. I'll tell a funny story about that. Lotus Exige. Or was it Navora? Lotus Evora.
Yeah. We went miles. We went to like Northampton or something to go over the Lotus, yeah.
But I think
there was a few cars.
A 12C, I think I drove. But yeah, we were desperately trying to make a deal on a 540C happen. Mm. And I think there was a few things that I was considering, but it was all like, I was going into it going, I want the 540C, but I don't want to say that on YouTube
in case it doesn't work.
Yeah. In case it doesn't work, I don't want to say I'm going to get the 540C. But in my head, that's the car I wanted. But we were test driving a lot of things just in case. And it was the 430 that nearly threw us off because I arranged that test drive through Ferrari and Tony. It was one of the first few times we'd filmed. And I said to Tony, I said, look, we like this car. We're Ferrari people, but we can't fall in love with it because the audience will then want me to get a 430. And if I don't get it, they'll be let down. Tony at this point didn't understand YouTube.
No.
And I got in a Ferrari and 10 minutes down the road, we were both like, this is the best car ever. And I had to keep stopping and going, no, Tony, we're getting carried away. We can't, we're not supposed to. So we were both there loving the 430, but having to try and convince myself and the audience that it wasn't the right car for me, which was hard to do. But
yeah.
Ended up in the 540C.
I mean, I had to march you down to the dealer, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an easy thing because what a huge amount of money and supercars and I don't know. Yeah. And long story short.
Still in your 20s as well, by the way. I mean, it was a large amount of money.
It was a large amount of money, 27, 28. And I just started making money on YouTube. Anyway, long story short, it didn't work out for multiple reasons. Car didn't really work that well. I had to park it about 15 minutes away, 20 minutes away from my house. It was a bore to go and pick up and collect. Didn't like driving it around in London, how much attention you got, how much you had to think about where you were parking it.
Yeah.
Just didn't bond with it as much as I wanted to. So how long did I keep that car? Seven months?
Yeah, 7 or 8 months, yeah. I sold that car.
You did sell that car, well done. Which is when I had the dream about the Ferrari, which actually probably was spawned around the 430 drive. My realization at the time, I probably should have just gone and bought a 458.
Well, that was in contention.
That was in contention, but off camera.
Too much money though.
At the time, they were a lot of money and I didn't think I could stretch there. Mm. 540 was just a bit more affordable. But yeah.
It was new and modern at the time.
New and modern. But of course, when I had the McLaren, I got the Abarth as well, the 695 Proposto, which was a hilarious one. Do you remember that? I was looking for a daily because I knew once I had the McLaren, I knew that was coming. We'd made the order and it wasn't coming for like a month and a half or 2 months, right? Do you remember? It was arriving, we did the whole deal and it wasn't coming for a while.
But why was that? Was that registration?
Cause something.
I think we bought it in like, I'll tell you why, it was nearly Christmas.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah.
And you took delivery in the January.
Yes.
And then we went to Richmond Park.
Yeah.
And we saw Schmee.
Yeah. You're so right.
Yeah.
We'd done the deal on the McLaren. So I went, okay, I need a daily because I'm not going to daily a McLaren.
Boy, spending some money at this point.
Oi, hey! So I was walking around and I didn't know what I wanted for daily. And I was in central London and they had an Abarth dealer on the corner. And I thought, I'll just poke my head in there. And as I went in, they had the Abarth record edition sitting in the window. And I didn't even know what I wanted. I saw this carbon fiber and this roll cage. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And I started to the salesman who had been sitting on the car for 6 months and couldn't sell it. And he just sees me and he's like, this is my guy.
This is him.
And I remember calling you going, oh, Tony, I've done something crazy. You know what? I wonder if I still have those messages on my WhatsApp.
They'll be on there somewhere. I was gonna
have a quick, brief look. But do you remember that phone call?
I remember. Yeah, I remember it vividly because you basically said you bought a car through the window.
Yeah, which is exactly what happened.
I'm gonna buy it. You said.
I'm gonna buy it. It must have been on a previous. Must have been on a previous phone.
Yeah,
because my messages go back to January 2017.
Yeah.
I bought it. Loved it. Amazing car. Great car, actually. Used it a lot. That was my legit daily at the time. Moved over to the 360. Dream come true. That car's still with me today. We went and found the Cayman, 718 Cayman S.
Good car, that was.
Again, we were undecided on what that daily would be. And you'd arranged a test drive at Porsche Guildford, Legends at Porsche Guildford.
Yeah.
And as you drove around the corner in that car, went, that's the one.
Yeah.
Do you remember? We went out and that was like the first test drive.
Yeah.
Oh, we'd done TTR. Anyway, I was like, this is the
we've
one.
We've done a few.
And I was like,
TTRS was one, yeah.
That was genuinely, I decided it based on the test drives we did. Good car. Really enjoyed owning it, but completely soulless.
Bit numb, yeah.
Bit numb. Really enjoyed owning it, but just a bit
just
too
a really good car.
Just a really good car, but yeah, lacking in any sort of character. Did that amazing trip from Barcelona to London in it after the F1 testing. Drove through the snow and the wind. Yeah. Super cool.
Sold that car as well.
I sold that car. You've done well on selling the cars. Then what did I get? 911 Carrera T, drive the world.
Yeah. Is that it?
No, there's been some other cars. What have I got?
RS6?
RS6? No, but what else have I had? I just 911 40th anniversary.
Disaster.
Abarth 595 Competizione.
Disaster.
BMW X3.
Good car.
Sold that one. I feel like there's something else. What am I missing, guys? Oh, the Citroen, the C4 rally car. Loved that. That was hilarious.
Really?
That was a great bit of kit, yeah. No, I genuinely had a good fun in that. We had the one thing somebody reminded me of the day. The Clio 182 car that we gave away.
We went to Newcastle for that car.
We went to Newcastle and we gave it away as part of a competition on here. Bought the car for like $5,000 and gave it away for free.
We've actually done quite a lot, mate. Over the years.
We've done tons, mate.
Yeah. You don't realise until you start talking back.
Exactly. Anyway, we've been going for an hour now, so let's come back to you, Tony.
Is there any more for you? Is there any more in there?
I've probably forgotten something and everyone's going to yell at me and go, oh my God, how can you forget you've owned this car? But I'm drawing a blank for now. So we'll move on because I know how long it's going to take you to get through your next section.
I'll try and be quick.
I'd love to know. From when did it start to get juicy? You've told me before, maybe you've told the audience before, but you're coming out of the vans. What was your first proper sports car?
So I had a good few years where there was a gap. That I just, when I started to become a motor dealer, I just drove stock.
Sure.
Crap.
Whatever.
I didn't always sell nice cars. And it was probably 2010, maybe going into 11, that I bought for myself a E92 V8.
Hello.
M3 convertible.
Yeah, you like those, don't
DCT.
You?
DCT.
You like a convertible BMW.
Yeah, and that was the bomb, that car. Yeah. And I bought that personally. I drove it for about 6 months, and then I sold it through the business, obviously. Another car that really, really sticks to mind, which you saw, that I bought around the similar time, which is an investment, was an Escort RS Cosworth.
Yeah.
The Mallard green one, which I actually took that car in part exchange. But I always wanted one of them, and I used to clean one when I was a kid on my estate. One man had one, and I always, it was almost like the dream car. And actually, when I actually got one, I didn't really like it.
Yeah,
I never drove it.
Meetyourheroes.com.
Yeah, I'd done like 300 miles in it in 7 years. It just, and I used to service it every year at Ford, and it had proper, and I made a load of money on it, to be fair. That was one, that was another one. And then there's a few in between ones that stand out. SLS.
Oh, yes. Did you buy that new, or you bought it used?
That was a used car. And I was flapping at the time. And actually, this is a bit of a cheat, this car, because I used some of the business money and some of my money to have it at the time, because it was a lot of money. It was like, back then it was like 90 grand, and the business was still quite young. Mm. And to take 90 grand away from the business. So I used some of the business money and then topped it up with mine. So that's a bit of a cheat car. But I was flapping with that car as much as I really wanted it, because of the cool doors.
Yeah, it's cool. At the time, it was so good. Still cool to get.
Yeah. Anyway, I couldn't give that car away. Oh, yeah. As in, I just about managed to sell it. And then time went on a bit. I had 997 Turbo. There is a 996 Carrera 4S in there, which was,
hello,
which was before, I forgot about it. That was before the M3. That was a legit car, because back then it was fairly new. It was still quite old, but it was 6 or 7 years old. And then what did I have after then?
Where did the California come in?
Oh my God. It's flipping hell. I forgot about that car. So at that time, I'd stopped funding cars, financing cars. So there was a big period. So I'd funded that first BMW that I told you about. And then the next car I funded was the 570S.
Oh, wow.
Which we'll go to in a minute. Yeah. I used to pay for them because I thought that was the right thing to do. And obviously it's not the right thing to do, but I always thought it was the right thing to do. So, I bought the... I had a...
Gen 1 California or Cali T?
No. I had an F... Right, so let's go the Ferrari thing. So I had a 360.
Spider.
Spider.
Yeah.
F1.
Yeah.
In like a light blue.
Yeah.
I think it was Azura, California.
I was going to say, yeah, that would be the right color.
I think it was.
Yeah.
That was a... That's another cheap car. That was half and half.
I would advise against that car.
That was the worst thing ever. High mileage, proper. Yeah, yeah.
When those 360 Spiders are dogs, they're dogs.
And then like the first proper Ferrari I bought was an F430 Spider.
Beautiful.
F1.
Yeah.
Black car with crema, low mileage, 5,000 miles. And that was about me. I was about your age.
Okay.
I was probably 30, 31,
nice.
I would say. And that was like my first real proper legit supercar at that point. And then, I'd had V8 R8s, but they were the businesses basically. So, but that's the one that
That
really
was the one that's a standout.
And then for some reason, I know what it was. I bought a house. And I owned that car, no finance.
Okay.
So I sold the car. And I used the money for a house.
For a house.
So then there was a bit of a gap, and I got myself back going again, and I bought the California V8.
The first gen V8 one.
Not even the 30. Just like, honestly, mate, you put your foot down, it just didn't go anywhere. It just made a noise.
Yeah, a good noise, though.
But I drive to Switzerland in that car.
Well done. Good effort.
With my daughter's mother.
Yeah.
At the time. And yeah, we went on a bit of a road trip. We went to Switzerland. We literally just drove to Switzerland back, spent the weekend in Switzerland, then come back.
Super nice.
Like, weird. But I didn't lose a penny.
Not weird for me. I do it, fairly regularly.
But I didn't lose a penny on that car. Yeah. Not a penny. And then I up the game.
Okay. You went just, never again in
just
California.
Before, yeah, because I realised that is no good, mate. That is a terrible car. And then before I met you, this was like starting to get in big league now. Again, wrote a check for it stupidly. I bought a 2012 458 Italia.
Wow.
In what's the orangey red?
Was it Scuderia?
Scuderia. Yeah. And I bought it from Colchester. Okay. And that was the first real proper supercar. It had lovely spec, it had carbon seats, it had a black roof. It done 1,500 miles from new.
Wow.
I think it was like 3 years old.
Okay.
And I made money on that car. Like, I drove that car, I give like 170 for it or something. And, oh, mate, flipping hell, isn't that the Aston?
Which Aston?
The V8.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. So that's in there as well. Okay. That was just before then.
Before the California or before the 458?
That was before the 458.
Okay.
That's a full-on... That's a disaster. I've
so you had some bad stuff and went, I've got to sort this out.
I want a proper car.
I'll buy the best supercar on the market.
And I had an M6 Grand Coupe as well.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, that's some real quirky stuff.
Some real, like, weird stuff. But then I stepped out and thought, well, I'm going to have a proper car.
If I'm going to spend this money, I'm going to do it properly.
And then I sold the 458 and bought the R8.
Which is when we met.
I had the R8 V10 Plus, brand new.
We met because I think Paul had told me the story that he met this guy who was down at Dub Customs who'd bought an R8 and he was getting all the Le Mans stickers put on because Audi had just released a Le Mans edition.
Correct.
Which essentially was a load of stickers.
Yeah.
And you were putting the stickers on so you could sell it, not as a Le Mans edition, but basically so it looked like a Le Mans edition and you would flip it and get some money.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Mate, and
I was like,
cool,
I want to meet this guy. Because he just sounds like an absolute genius. He's gone, right, Audi released a special edition. I'll make a special edition. Off you go.
And it looked cool as well. It was amazing, a white car with black wheels. And
you put the red stripes or something like that.
Well
done you.
And there's still some photos on social media of that car in, you know, the photographers. Because at that point, he used to go and do twat laps.
Yeah.
Obviously, around London.
He still does, by the way.
No. You won't see me in London. Maybe for a bit of dinner, but that's it.
Yeah, sure.
And then flipping hell, what's from there? And then,
well, everything's been charged. I'm trying to protect you slightly because I know that sometimes you want to hide some of the stuff that you've had.
It's only like the last year, so
most other stuff's been well documented. Obviously, we had the all black GT3 RS, one of the first in the country at the time for the 991.2 generation, and the GT3 that was before that. So you had the well documented Porsches.
Had a yellow GT4.
You had a yellow GT4. I remember that well. 570S, of course, we've spoken about.
Yeah. And a Yas Marina Blue M4 Comp.
You did. Was the 991.1 Turbo S cab you did, was that yours or a business car?
So, that was a company car.
Company car, okay.
And it was you boys that said, sign right it and wrap it and all that, get some promo. That was the same time I had the 570S.
Yeah.
So that was a bit after. I also had a 458 Spider.
Oh, yes. Oh, and your 488s. You've had like 15 488s since I've known you.
15.
Yeah, just keep buying them. Yeah, they won't be the last.
Spiders and coupes.
There'll be more, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Yeah, 458 spiders, 458 Italias.
Yeah. 488s.
Yeah, you're a man that changed his car a lot, but as we said right at the beginning, and we've spoken about this so many times, I think it's not that unusual if you have the desire to try out different cars, own different cars, you should find a way to do it. And I'm talking at every level. I know a great guy who helped me last year when I was staying at, up in Yorkshire. He's a young guy, not loads of money, and he's changing his car every 2 or 3 months. Yeah. Like, honestly, it's... And the same, there's lots of people on Instagram. Lots of, if you can and you want to, why the hell not? There's rule that you have to keep a car a certain amount of time. And it means that you've had these amazing experiences. You've forgotten half the things you've owned.
Well, it's Performante in there. It's the 570S.
Yeah,
there's
one good point.
992 Turbo S. That was fairly recent.
Yeah. There's lots of stuff in there. Yeah,
Speciale.
But you've had the experience of owning it. And just like I'm finding out with the RS6, the best way to work out whether you like something or want something is just to go and buy it.
Yeah. AMG GTRs, AMG GTR Pro. A couple of them is...
Many, you're a maniac.
Many Porsches.
20. The Chiron? Oh, shit. Joking,
I can tell you another one because I've since sold it. I had a 488 Pista.
Yes, you did.
But I've sold it now. So I did have that. That was one of the secret cars.
Speciale?
Speciale, yeah. Yeah, that was cool, that car. And I remember like bricking myself when I bought that car because I funded that car.
Big money.
And it was big money, 300 grand car. And I thought, flipping hell, this is like... And at the time, I had the Performante, I had the AMG GTR, I had the GT3 RS, and I was just being a bit of a dick, to be honest, like...
Got carried away, didn't you?
I got a
you
little
got
bit
caught up in the hype.
Little bit carried away, and then I reeled myself back and thought, actually, why am I doing this? Like, and that's why, literally, I don't post on social media about my personal cars, because why do I have to? Like,
yeah, I actually, we probably should clarify that slightly if we're doing an episode talking about cars, because a lot of people, I think, sometimes go, oh, what's Tony's personal car? And lots of you will know or will have figured out, and if you come to BTG Lives, you might see it, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not sitting there saying that it's like literally you don't want anyone to know in the world. It's more of the fact that you don't feel a need or a desire to post about it or to talk openly about it.
It's personal.
Because it's your personal car. It's separate from what you do here online. Don't forget, as much as we love what we're doing here, Tony's here fundamentally for this podcast, but to help promote his business, help raise awareness of his business, help grow in that area.
Yeah.
And so what you do in your personal life isn't always stuff that you feel the need to share. Is that right? I'm putting words into your mouth.
No, you're bang on, mate. I don't post everything I have and
everything you do.
And everything I do. And that's my right. I don't want to. I'm
you
not
want
in
a different
space.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah.
For me it'd be a bit weird if I had secret cars. Maybe I do. Who knows? anyway, well, we've definitely skipped through both of us some elements. But
yeah.
It's because we've had such an incredibly... We've been so fortunate and so lucky to have owned some incredible cars and so many cars, both of us. Absolutely ridiculous. And I think, I'm so glad we got to this point because no matter what happens in the rest of our lives, to have had the experiences we've had and the cars that we've been able to own, absolutely unbelievable.
For sure, yeah.
And fingers crossed it may continue into the future anyway. And, well... I know.
Well, I'm getting a 918 one day.
Oh, well, here he is.
Because I really, really want one.
I was getting excited. Well, this year, guys, stay tuned because there's a interesting cars coming to see through glass, which is true. Just can't say much about it yet. But you just stole
my thunder. 918 out.
You stole my thunder. I think that would suit you so well.
I just need to move once I get my new house. That's
it would
my
suit
list,
you very
mate.
Well. But could you actually drive it?
Yeah, I'll drive flat.
You have too many garage queens, mate.
Are you joking?
No, I'm not. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Give it a thumbs up if you're watching here on YouTube. And make sure you subscribe. Turn on notifications so you don't miss future episodes. If you want to follow Tony and not say anything about his personal cars, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass on my social media platforms. And we'll be back with you for another episode next week. Bye-bye.
See y'all.